The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Elon, Kanye, Roe, Ukraine, midterms, inflation, January 6th committee. 2022 was a bitch. And it threw a lot our way. And you know, I was sitting here thinking about, well, I could just do the traditional kind of like, oh, let's break down 2022 and talk about the politics and the you know, the machinations and who was up, who was down. But I wanted to approach this one a little differently. So I got the guy who can help us create more of a philosophical tilt. A different way of kind of approaching 2022. And that guest to unpack it for us before we really get into the new year is none other than my buddy Steve Schmidt, political commentator, strategic advisor, who's counseled heads of state, CEOs, leading athletes, major corporations, academic institutions, not-for-profit organizations. You've known Steve. He keeps it real. And he's not afraid to make you think. And we did a whole lot of thinking while we were talking. Join us for our conversation right after this. Well, ho, 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 and merry happy holiday. It's good to see you, my friend. Steve Schmidt in the house.
Good to see you, Mike. How are you?
Very I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, winding down this wild and crazy 2022 and looking forward to an even stupider 2023. How about you, my friend? How you been?
First rule of holes, when you find yourself in one, stop digging. But yeah. I'm not sure that the country is ready to observe the first rule of holes. So we... We'll have more chaos ahead, but I do think Donald Trump is finished politically, and the Trump era, such as it was, is at its end, and I think that is something for us to be grateful for and to start taking stock and to assess the damage after a storm, after a hurricane, and we saw a couple years back the devastation. You know, that hit the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, you know, those were islands that were hit by two hurricanes back to back. And so we could well have another hurricane coming, but it won't be Hurricane Donald. And I think that's an important thing to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you and I hear a lot of people saying that. And I see the damage done and the wounds inflicted. Both by himself and others, but I'm just not convinced everybody's over him. I know he's not over them. And it's like one of those torrid relationships that everybody looking at it going, I don't even know how this works. How the hell are you two even coexisting? But there is this sort of this symbiosis that is ingrained between the two parties. And I'm just not sure that when he decides he's ready to engage, I mean, really engage. I mean, what he's doing now to me is just kind of stupid pity patty. I'll raise some cash. I'll make some noise. Yeah, I'm pissed at DeSantis, but I'm always pissed at DeSantis. If he decides to really push on this thing, irrespective of all the other things that are going on, don't you think that that still can create the kind of drag that just keeps us mired? And because here's the weak, that you know, the weakest link here is, Steve, you know, the weakest link is not you. It's not me. It's not even the Trump activists. It's the damn media. Because they're going to perpetuate, they're going to push, they're going to, I mean, it's just like this past couple of weeks, you know, I did one thing on MSNBC and they were asking about Trump. I said, why are we talking about this? And the host was like, well, there goes all that preparation by the executive producer. I said, well, you know, why are we talking about this? The man is, the party is past him. I agree with you on that. Where I think where we are now is the infection is so infused in the system that it can basically operate on its own. It doesn't need the host anymore. It doesn't need Trump to keep pushing out those viral cells. But yet and still, he's there. He's still there.
Well, I think this is, let's talk a lot about this today, because I think there's several aspects to it. Let me first just kind of where I'm coming from on this, from a prediction perspective. I know that Trump credits me with being the first person on American television when he came down the escalator who said, looking around when everyone said he was a clown and a joke, that he could win. Further, you and I were in a very, very small group of people, even at the end when it was clear he would be the nominee, on all of the news shows, sit there and people know there's going to be a brokered convention. He won't be the Republican nominee, you know, so on and so forth. And like everyone, mostly I was wrong. I thought Secretary Clinton would win. I had a lack of imagination, about the anger in the country. And I think I've evolved on my perspective and understanding, of how it is that the MAGA movement took off. I know I was among the first to predict violence that flow from his refusal of an election in September, months before he did it. I know I was among the first. I think I coined the phrase banana Republicanism in real time on television as Michael Flynn was leading a chant, a lieutenant general of the United States Army. Of lock her up, talked about everything that would happen over a long stretch, but the place that I'm at now is that we have a radical movement, we have an extremist movement that is alive and fertile and will be competed over electorally. By Republican politicians, because that is the party of Trump, right? The party that's existed since 1854, that you were the chairman of, that I played a leading role in over a couple of presidential elections, that party's over.
Right.
Gone. It's profoundly changed by the Trump era, by the Trump presidency. And so I think when you look at this moment, right, we're in for more trouble ahead. But this moment, this 7-year era, has come to its end because
I see a point.
Fundamentally, Trump has become boring. And so, what is the evidence of this? The evidence of this is this: when Trump announced his candidacy, where were all the hedge fund guys? He had Dick Morris, Madison Cawthorn, and the MyPillow guy in the front row. Where was Steve Schwarzman? Where were all the hedge fund billionaires? Where were all the senators, all the members of Congress? I mean, the one North Star of this era is those people's cowardice.
Right.
So they have lost their fear of him. And at the end of the day, what I want to talk about is the Republican power structure, because it changed. And I think you and I are particularly well suited for this, because you were there at the moment of the creation of Fox News as the political party.
Yeah.
And Fox News in 2009, you know, the real head of the party, you know, such as it is or was, you know, was in fact Roger Ailes. And the person that deposed Roger Ailes as the most powerful Republican, the one that every one of these guys was scared to death of, was Donald Trump.
Yep.
The king is dead. Long live the king. And the person who knocked Trump off the top of the hill, and he didn't do it by combat. He did it by cleverness. He stuck up. He snuck up there. Mm-hmm. But Ron DeSantis is the guy. He didn't do a Christie Nome. Ron DeSantis never humiliated himself and gave Donald Trump a replica of Mount Rushmore with Trump on it.
Right.
He didn't defend himself like Nikki Haley. Right? He didn't show how weak he was like Kevin McCarthy. You know, Ron DeSantis built a coalition in Florida. I mean, we can look around the country and say that the country's evenly divided. Well, it's not in Florida. It was 63% in a state like Florida. That's like getting 88 points in an NFL game.
Mm-hmm.
It's built a coalition. Not only do I think he is the Republican frontrunner, I think he's in effect, he's the presumptive nominee. Who's going to beat him? Asa Hutchinson? He's in 25 times stronger a position than George W. Bush was in 1999. And Bush was in a really strong position coming out of 99 into 2000. Ron DeSantis in a really strong position, but I think Trump is done. He's done.
He's going to
be prosecuted, and he's going to be held to account whether he goes to prison or not, but he will be ruled constitutionally ineligible to run for office. And I really think the conversation now that we should talk about in retrospect is, how did all this happen? And who are the people whose character is so low to have allowed it to happen? A lot of those people, like Kevin McCarthy, are still with us. But Kevin McCarthy's not going to get to the top of the hill here either.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think Kevin's got more boulders than he realized coming down that hill at him. And I appreciate your analysis and agree with it in large measure. I think the test for a Ron DeSantis is going to be, how does he play once he gets outside of Florida? You know, we'll see whether he's got a glass jaw or not in that regard. But he's also, the interesting thing about this transition off of Trump into this new thing within the GOP, you know, it's sort of masked by this whole argument. Well, I don't like Trump, but I like his policies. It's an updated version of I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I think Trump is awful, but I like his policies. What you get with DeSantis and those who are beginning to emerge in this space is, how are they going to define both of those pieces for themselves, the sort of the Trump qualities that people like, the brassness, the in your face, the sort of direct talk, with this sort of policy piece, such as it is, beyond, you know, poking, you know, China or cuddling close to Russia? Where do you see the party aligning itself and this new titular head emerging to do that?
Well, let's step back right again, and let's look at Trump, and let's also look at the collapse of cable news ratings that's taking place, right, as people are tuning all of this stuff out. So let me just state up front, there's never been a moment where I have felt more completely disconnected from the Washington, D.C. conventional wisdom than I do right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's delusional. And if I understand it, it's this. It's that this was a great victory in 2022 for Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer. Democracy has been saved. Kevin McCarthy will be the speaker. The New Hampshire primary won't be first. Joe Biden is the only person in the Democratic Party who can beat Trump, and therefore needs to be renominated at age 82 to prevent the loss of democracy from a resurgent Donald Trump. And I reject all of this. I don't believe any of
so
this.
So go through that ticker tape you just laid out there. Just go through those points and say, what do you think the reality is versus what conventional wisdom says it is?
Fundamental thing, right, that we hear is, well, the people are tuning out of politics because the ratings of the political shows are down. Well, that's not borne out by reality. We have record turnout elections,
right,
building in successive election cycles. People have never been more engaged in politics. Maybe the content sucks, right? And therefore, right, they're turning it off. Now, what is it that they're turning off? I think it's a premise. Okay, I think it's this. It's the premise that politics is the headwaters of American culture, that everything flows from whatever it is that happens on Capitol Hill or in the geographic proximity to it. It is reported out on CNN. So I think there is a chasm of disconnect, right, between Washington and the corridor where most of the people on television appear from, right? So if you watch CNN today, right, let's just throw out a number. 75% of the people who will appear as a guest on CNN today will likely appear from Washington, D.C., which is where 0.002% of the American population lives, in a city that's among the wealthiest in the country, ringed by all the wealthiest counties in the country. This is not a representation of America. So the representation of America, right, that is being rejected is a rejection of a powerful elite that sits atop media, that sits atop politics, and it sits atop business. And there is no greater picture to me that demonstrates this moment than this picture of Sam Bankman-Fried sitting in stained shirt, shorts, and flip-flops with a grinning Bill Clinton and a Tony Blair, right, for paid for appearance at the SBX conference a few weeks after Fortune magazine said this guy is going to be the world's first trillionaire. Now, I can't speak a coherent sentence about Bitcoin, but I knew that guy was Gen Z or whatever Bernie Madoff as soon as I saw him on the cover of Fortune magazine being labeled as a trillionaire. And everybody else in a country where 40% of the population doesn't have $400 of cash understands this. So what Trump is a philosopher. And Trump is a philosopher of fuck you-ism.
Yep.
That's Trump's philosophy. And so there's a lot of people in this country who've had a lot taken from them, right? So you go down, right, the Ohio River Valley, right? You look at the shuttered steel plants. You look at the parts of the country that were forgotten and left behind. We spent as a country $330 billion giving a student loan bailout to the millennials. We could have canceled all medical debt in this country for $80 billion. So what Trump had to offer wasn't policy. What Trump had to offer wasn't solutions. What Trump had to offer was a giant national collective fuck you to the people at the top. So I think that we live in an era of unprecedented corruption, certainly in our careers. We've not seen a level of corruption in Washington, D.C. Like this since the beginning of the 20th century. Of power and wealth. You look at the Qatari scandal playing out in the EU, the amount of influence of Saudi money. All of this corruption in Washington, D.C. is not unnoticed by the American people. And so you look at someone like Barack Obama out on the campaign trail, right, in the end of the campaign. And I was watching him. And my only thought was there was a moment in time in September of 08 before the economic collapse. John McCain was ahead of that guy.
Yep.
I actually believed at a point we could win an election against Barack Obama. So I'm watching Barack Obama out on the campaign trail. And I just sit here at age 52. And I'm like, wow, is that guy great? And he's getting better. He's better today
than he
was then, which is a mark of all these guys who are truly like at the most highest and gifted level of all of this stuff. But I'm like, we lost an election to that guy, right? Katie Hobbs, Governor-elect Hobbs. I'm delighted she won, but she won narrowly, as did Mark Kelly.
Yeah.
Right? Against legitimate fascists and kooks. And the response to that is, this was a great victory. This wasn't a great victory. This was a near-death experience.
How does that then play out when we sit back and we look at the course of not just the past 7 years, but how it really sort of came to a head in 2022 in many respects, when we're looking at rounding in the 23 and setting up a presidential election? What does today's landscape tell us about tomorrow? Because in everything that you're saying, where does a Joe Biden and a DeSantis or a Larry Hogan or, Sununu, where do these players fit in from a leadership side? But then more importantly, to your underlying point, America accepted the fuck you argument of Trump, right? In large measure.
A lot of people deserve to fuck you.
Right. But I'm saying, so where do they go with that? Because I would think that is unrequited love there. that still has not been fulfilled, because you just laid out the corruption, the political gamism, all of the crap that we're going through. American people still look at, well, what the hell's changed?
The most powerful impulse in American society is towards new and towards change. And so right now, if you think about this as a circle, we are in a condensing circle, right? The circle is getting smaller, and the crazier inside that circle is getting closer together and hotter. Let's get out of the circle. Let's be for better. So when I think about this, when I look at someone, right, this isn't abstract, who is saying something completely different. And I would commend everybody who can hear this to watch Tim Ryan's farewell speech from the House. I want that. And so I'm gonna say something, which it's an 8-minute long speech. Go watch John Kennedy speak to the Massachusetts legislature, 1961 in January, as president-elect. It's called the Arabella speech. I want that. So let's look back at the founders of the country, the revolutionary generation, right? When it became time for generational change, right, the last of the founders, right, founding generation to be president was Monroe. The first, right, of their children to become president, younger generation, was John Quincy Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And John Quincy Adams always believed that until slavery was abolished, the work of the American Revolution was unfinished. When he tried the Armistead case before the Supreme Court, John Calhoun, depicted in the movie, but the senator from South Carolina, they were threatening secession for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, there were people who said in the 1820s and 1830s, we should have settled this in the 1780s. That issue was resolved in the 1860s. Then we had another 100 years of legalized apartheid society, racial terror. It's only been the 50-star American flag, where we are all equal under the law. Only the 50-star American flag has held legally. If not, in fact, the full promise of the country extended to every person in it, right? So here we are, right? What we got to talk about is better. Now John Quincy Adams literally watched the Battle of Bunker Hill. He watched his father build the country. He was probably the greatest Secretary of State of in the country's history, with the exception maybe of George Marshall. One of the great diplomats. He was known as the sage, but his part of the journey, on the American River, such as it is, was as a boy at his father's knee, right, to become the first generation that was not a founding generation to take over the leadership of the country.
Right.
And an old man in the 1840s, and he dies before the Civil War. He does not live to see the end of slavery, though he abhorred it, meaning that the journey that we're on as a country won't be finished in our lifetimes.
Right.
It will expand on, we hope, for another 10 generations. 6 years from now, we will stand at the 250th anniversary of humanity's greatest achievement, which is the American Republic. Despite all of its flaws, we are trustees, guardians of this, and we will give it to our posterity and hand it off. And when we think about time, this is a remarkable thing to understand. The 10th president of the United States was John Tyler. He was the first vice president to succeed to the office when William Henry Harrison died. Those guys beat Martin Van Buren, who was the president that John Quincy Adams condemned in his arguments before the Supreme Court as a former president in the Armistead case. John Tyler, born in 1791, has a living grandson. So when we think about politics and we think about what people are turning off, let's look at what they're turning on. What's the most popular show in America right now?
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back right after this.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. It shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the most popular show in America right now? Well, who's making all the most popular shows in America right now? It's the same guy. It's Taylor Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Yellowstone, 1883, 1923, Tulsa King. Right? You look at Tulsa King, right? Sylvester Stallone is gotten out of college. Gotten out of prison. Right? He goes to Tulsa. Right. He meets up with the black Uber driver. Right. And he gives that guy $50,000 in cash that he had shaken down from the pot dealer to go buy a Lincoln Navigator.
Right.
And the guy at the car dealership won't sell it to him. Right. And Sylvester Stallone goes in there and he says, the reason you won't sell this guy the car is because he's a young black guy with cash. You look at him and you think he's the dangerous guy. I'm the dangerous guy.
Right.
Right. And he beats the shit out of him.
Right. Right.
But the point is, whether it's the treatment of the Native Americans in those shows, whether it's the values, the conflict of values, virtue and vice. Right. That show is in all of them, in my view. Right. Are deeply attached to the American character, the American ethos. These are American shows.
Yeah, but how does all of that translate politically? Because you're still, you know, folks watching Yellowstone and you know 1923 or what have you is not necessarily gonna how the politics of the country plays out. You still got to run the race. You still got to make.
These are the most political shows on television.
Yeah, are you saying there's a one-for-one correlation between what people are watching and how they're voting?
What I'm saying is that there's an argument being made, right, that is a route for someone to pursue. So there's this, the most profound political moment in Yellowstone, right, is a scene this year between two women. Right. Between Beth Dutton, who's on the dance floor at a cowboy bar in Bozeman, her husband is there, and a woman comes, hits on her husband, says The character Rip looks at her and says, "Where's your husband?" He goes, "I'm married." And she goes, "Well, he's in Sacramento." And she goes, "Where's your wife?" And he goes, "On the dance floor," points at Beth Dutton. And the woman walks up to her and says, "I'm going to fuck your husband. I'm going to take your husband home." And she cracks a bottle over her head. In the morning, when they wake up in the jail cell, it turns out she's from California, right? And you have this line, right? And the line is, as her jail cellmate says, right? She goes, "Well, it's always some bitch from California." That's the most political statement on American television show, because what it's about is taking. Right?
Right.
The overwhelming majority of people in this country feel like they have been taken from. And the people they feel that they have been taken from are the people at the top. In an unfair system that they think is completely rigged.
But they're still voting for them, Steve. 95% of the Congress got reelected. You want to make that change. Don't give me the gerrymandering argument, because that's bullshit. Well, there's still two candidates on the ballot.
Most of those people, right, when you look at the victory, right, coming back to, let's look at one of the most extreme examples, right, as an archetype.
Before we do that, let's go back to the race you worked on, Tim Ryan. Why the hell isn't Tim Ryan in the United States Senate?
Because Mike DeWine, the governor candidate, won that race by 26 points, right? It's a one-party state. You know, Tim lost by, you know, five.
So what does that tell you?
Well, I think let's look at two governor candidates who both got in the 60s. So the biggest win I ever had when I was running races was the Schwarzenegger campaign, won by 58% of the vote. Right. And that's a game, right? If you were to look at this like sports, right, that's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. It's huge. That's huge.
I honestly, like, in a state like Ohio and in a state like Florida, Ohio and Florida, let's think back to Tim Russert, right? 20 years ago, right? The swing states in a presidential election. Both these states have Republican governors who got 63% of the vote. Right. And these guys are like, that's like I said, that's an NFL game. Right. 80 points. So Mike DeWine in Ohio, that's a different election. So Mike DeWine's slogan easily could have been, "Mike DeWine, he's good enough." Right. Mike DeWine, he's fine. Mike DeWine's not going to fuck anything up.
Right.
Mike DeWine, make your life harder, easier. Mike DeWine, he's fine. That's why Mike DeWine got 63% of the vote. That's not the case in Florida. They like that guy.
Oh, they do.
You know what people in Florida like about it? Right? They like about Ron DeSantis is they view him as having saved their jobs. They think Ron DeSantis was as right about COVID. The Ron DeSantis people in Florida, they think he was as right about COVID as Barack Obama was right about Iraq. Right? That's the level they think he was right. So, like, all the people, right, going to mask up forever, all of that stuff. If we had this to do over again, who is the person in this country as a political leader, judging from the benefit of hindsight, right, that was the guy closest to getting it right? Was it Trump? Was it Andrew Cuomo? You know who got it right? Ron DeSantis got it right.
Yeah, and but Ron DeSantis got it right, Steve, when you paper over the number of people who died in the state.
No. We're not in a law. We're not in a courtroom.
And we're not in a courtroom, but people still die. I can't. What are you telling me?
It's about feeling. It's about feeling.
I know. I got a devil's advocate here, baby. Come on.
Michael, this is the thing that we lost sight of, right? There's a movie everyone should watch. It's like Christmas season is Emancipation with Will Smith, right? And I use that as another example of culture. And I'll talk about something that binds all.
Wait a minute. I want to make
this point. This is the essential point.
Okay.
This is national character, right? Doesn't matter, right? You're a descendant of the revolution. You're a descendant of a slave. You're a descendant of an American Indian. You're a Hispanic American. It doesn't matter. You are a descendant of a person in this country who is the original person as an American, your family, who's the first to declare at the first instance they could do it. Don't fucking tell me what to do.
Right.
That's the national character. That's what Ron DeSantis got right. And that's why Ron DeSantis is going to be the Republican nominee. And now, when I was talking earlier about this, right, like I will say this, right, 82-year-old man running for re-election,
right,
and Joe Biden's physical condition is obscene.
Right.
It's obscene. Right. And it should be opposed. Now, Joe Biden, right, can't have two things happen. Right. He can't run with one person running against him one on one, mano a mano or mano a woman. Joe Biden's protected if he's got 11 people running against him or six people running right. against him. In trouble if he's got one. And Joe Biden can't lose the New Hampshire primary. And trust me, and you know this, right? No matter what anyone says in Washington, right? The most delusional declaration of the year and the dumbest act of politics of 2022, and there were a lot, is the belief by the Biden administration, his political team, that they can tamper with New Hampshire state law. Those people, and by the way, not for nothing, their state motto is live free or die. Those people are going first. Is the one thing that the entire state agrees on. So Joe Biden has set up the conditions for a challenger to beat him in that first state.
Right.
He'll be the first state. So when you look at generational change, right, all of the guys, right, who we think of as the people who won World War II in the leadership positions, Eisenhower, FDR, these people are all born in the 1870s, 80s, 90s. First president of the 20th century was born in the 20th century was John Kennedy. He was born in 1917. Ronald Reagan was born in 1911.
Right.
Jimmy Carter and George Herbert Walker Bush, 1924. So when we look at 1923 in Yellowstone, that world of 100 years ago, this is the world where Jimmy Carter and George Herbert Walker Bush are babies.
Right.
These guys who stormed the beaches, right? The babies of 1924.
Right.
Joe Biden was elected to the United States Senate in 1970. The baby boomer generation has held political power from 1992 through 2024. We will not have another baby boomer president in the United States. We are at an hour of generational change. Ron,
I agree with all that. It still begs my question. Why is Tim Ryan's ass sitting on a couch instead of going to elective office?
Because Tim Ryan didn't have a big enough boat, if you want to get right down to it. I mean, when you watch the movie The Perfect Storm, right, and you see those guys, George Clooney and everyone right. on the boat, right, like, you know, they would have made it if they had a destroyer, right?
Right.
They had a fishing boat, right, so they didn't make it because the wave was 120 feet high. Tim Ryan was not on top of the ballot. The Democrat who was on top of the ballot lost that race by like 25 points. The guy who lost the race by 5 points, right, is the guy who almost survived that wave in that fishing point. Tim Ryan's achievement in that race is profoundly more important, right, than, let's say, Katie Hobbs' victory against Harry Lee. But the outcome and what Tim Ryan did in that race is he revived a messaging that had gone extinct in the Democratic Party, which a lot of people look at it and say, well, that's the John Kennedy messaging. And so the Tim
but
Ryan
it wasn't enough to the broader point you're making about the electorate. It was the electorate didn't give a shit. He could have sounded like John F. Kennedy on steroids. It wasn't enough.
So what
is enough then for the voters in an era, in a post-Trump era, in a post, but here's the deal, Steve, here's the deal. In a post-Trump era, what is the message for Democrats, for sane Republicans, however you want to frame them, what is the message and the kind of candidates that they're going to put in front of these people who are still so pissed off at everything because they think they've been got? What is the messaging that cuts through that? Because if John F. Kennedy reduxed in 2022 couldn't do it, what does?
Is it the DeSantis model? I very rarely disagree with you politically, but I think you are off the fucking wall on this.
I'm gonna
tell you why. You had a guy in Ohio, right, with no party apparatus, right, who was completely abandoned, right? Republicans nationally spent $65-70 million, right? And he got 20%+ of the Republican vote. And one of the most polarized cycles, when you have the top of the ticket, right, running, right, 25 points ahead. You've been the down ballot guy.
Right.
If the guy at the top collapses, loses by 25 points, you win by 5. I look at you and I'm like, that guy can play ball. Maybe that guy should have been on the top of the ticket.
Right. Right.
Like at the end of the day, I think when you look at a race and you took all that he took, right? Sometimes, right, if you look at life as a journey, and right, I'll just say this, like 1858, Abraham Lincoln lost to the guy that he beat in 1860.
Yeah.
I like to think of it this way. Maybe Abraham Lincoln would have been a really shitty senator. Right. he was a good president.
I would have been. I'm agreeing with you in principle. I'm just saying, I mean, because I think Tim Ryan, I love that race.
I think people care greatly. I think that they're
not how they're voting.
No, this is the breakthrough I've had over the last 6 or 7 months. This is the place I've moved from.
Gotcha.
Right over the last year. Right. I would have given you a different answer at the end of the Lincoln Project. But here's the deal, right? The Trump industrial complex, right? You said it earlier, the media, it's an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs each other. I never understood truly what Eisenhower was talking about when he talked about the military industrial complex till I understood it truly through the eyes of the Trump industrial complex. You watched the Lincoln Project documentary, which was...
I was going to ask you about that. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, they're all the same people.
Yeah.
Right? They're the same people. Right? There is no difference between them and the Trump people. So one of the things, right, I'm a charter member of the Never Give a Fucking Inch Club, right?
I think you wrote the bylaws.
Right. Of the never Trump movement. But I didn't fight Trump because I wanted a career. I had a career. I gave up my career to fight Trump. Right. I fought him because I believed he was a threat. I fought him as out of conviction. Right. What people want is better. But we have to be humble. Right. Where is the humility in the Democratic Party? Right. That has been introspective. So we're losing to who?
Right.
Right. So what is it that people see that makes them say, I want that as opposed to this?
Right.
You try to have that conversation, you'll be shouted down by a lot of angry, smug, intolerant people, right? What's the argument here, right? That there's not intolerance and closed-mindedness on the left, right? That Trump is not fueled, right, by his opposition? If we only have two parties and we look at a party, we say, holy shit, guy who cited an insurrection, killed 1 million people?
Right.
Right. Well, maybe it's because the people who, like, 1 million people got killed, right, by the opioid epidemic. Right. Maybe we should have some empathy for those people when the government came back around in the next decade and said, you got to take this vaccine. Why they don't have trust, why they don't have faith. $400. $400. Right. That's a midpoint bottle of wine on a lot of menus in a Washington, D.C. restaurant That's the average savings of 40% of the population. Right? One of the fastest growth industries in the financial sector is unbanked. Right? Yeah. People that can't get a passbook savings industry. Right. So when you look at the news, right, you look at the amount of coverage that Elon Musk gets, the amount of national attention in the pages. Twitter's not a country. It's not a geography. It doesn't have land. It's not real. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, what do you do with the problem like Elon?
Are affected by this. So there's a total detachment in the conversation of what people think are important. So, like, look at the CNN morning show. I'm going to make 2 points on this thing. And I don't mean to make them mean, just true. So I'm sitting there with Tim Ryan in Ohio, right? He's one of the great moments in his campaign is the town hall.
Right.
Right. Brett Baer. I've known Brett Baer for 25 years. I'm watching this and I haven't watched Fox. So I'm like, what happened to Brett Baer's face? Like what the fuck did he do to his face? Right. He's all Botoxed up, right? He's got all the stuff around his eyes. There's not one guy in the state of Ohio who looks like that.
Right.
Not one. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, Brett Baer literally looks like a character, right, from state TV, from the Hunger Games, from Panem, where everyone in Panem is disfigured, right? They look differently, right, than the rest of the population.
Right.
Okay. So you got a morning show on CNN. We got 330 million people in this country, right? We got 80 million English speakers, right, in the UK, right? Yeah. Okay. 4 million more Irish. We got 35 million Canadians,
yeah.
And we 28 million Australians, right? So that's like basically the English speaker. You got most of the Caribbean too, right? So I'm a 500 million people. I could not think of putting together three worst people out of that 500 million for that morning show, right? There'd be no. I'd be like, that's the three. The 500 million. You picked that. And you're sitting there wondering why the ratings are going down?
Right.
You don't understand? Then I have a thought for you. If you don't understand why that show's ratings are collapsing, you have no business talking about politics.
Right. It's true.
Right?
It's true. That's very true.
You have as much connection to what's happening in this country as you do to tribal politics in Tajikistan. Zero.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.